listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza.
Alan Cardoza.
Only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. Every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific Standard Time, my guest and I will bring you answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. Our topic today is Fixing Freddy, a true story about a boy, a mom, and a very, very bad beagle. But before we get to our guest, I'm thrilled to have as my co-host, again, a former radio personality who worked for stations from Mississippi to California, Melody Fox. And she now goes by Dr. Melody Fox, as she has her doctorate in clinical psychology and is a California licensed psychologist and marriage and family therapist. And she currently has a private practice in Newport Beach, California, where she works with adults and their relationships, as well as teens and their families. Melody, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me back. I'm happy to be here.
Well, it's glad to have you. Let me tell you a little bit about our guest. Our guest is Paula Monier. She's Director of Acquisitions and Innovations for Adams Media. Paula is a veteran writer, editor, publishing executive, and author of several books, most notably Fixing Freddy, a humorous, heartwarming, and true story about her family's relationship with that very, very bad beagle who became the family's ultimate life teacher. Paula, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Well, thank you. Lovely to be here.
Well, it's glad to have you. So it looks like we're catching you at work at this time. Now,
yes, that's right.
Now, I had a chance to, I'm probably about halfway through the book now.
Oh, great.
So I'm enjoying it. I'm loving the fact that you do a great job of going from the standpoint of what's humorous about family life and what's heartwarming. So tell our listeners a little bit about how Freddie came into your life.
Well, Freddie was the result of one of those promises we make to our children that we never really think we'll have to fulfill. You know, we had a dog and we had a cat and we were full of animals as far as I was concerned. But when you're a single mom and you're living in an apartment, you know, your kids always want a puppy. You know, a grown adopted dog from the pound isn't good enough. They want a puppy. And I always said, oh, you know, we can't have a puppy unless you have your own house. You know, they're like babies. You have to have your own house to have a puppy.
Right.
And then unbeknownst to me, I scraped together the money, never thinking that would ever happen, to get a little house. And the day we moved in, Mikey looked at me and said, let's go get the puppy. So we were off to the races, and we ended up with the puppy beagle
right.
from hell.
Exactly. I was going to say, and then in reading the book, the first thing is yes, it is the beagle from hell. For those that haven't had a puppy, describe for them what the beagle from hell does.
Well, the beagle from hell turned out to be a half-priced dog who was 6 months old. So unbeknownst to me, he was entering his adolescence. Which is even worse than puppies, because babies, you know, they're like babies. You just have to watch them and take them outside and potty train them. But this dog was supposedly housebroken, but as it turned out, he peed on my dates and he pooped in my shoes and he ate all the knobs off my custom cherry cabinets and he howled incessantly and he took off whenever he could. He followed his nose. Beagles are escape artists. So he was just sort of disruptive on all levels.
Well, let's talk about how you fix Freddy. What are some of the things that you tried to do to make Freddy housebroken?
Well, first of all, I brought home all the books I had because, you know, here at Adams Media, we publish lots of dog training books, including the Dog Whisperer book. So I thought, oh, how hard can this be? And I'd grown up with dogs, but my dad was a colonel who trained the dogs. I'd never had to train a dog, you know, from scratch as a puppy. I'd adopted dogs from the pound, lovely dogs like Shakespeare in the book, who came fully trained, but I had never done it myself. And I really was not prepared for dog training at all. So we tried obedience classes, and Freddie was asked to leave because he didn't play too nicely with others. And then we tried the animal behaviorist, otherwise known as a puppy shrink, who said that Freddie suffered from separation anxiety and fear-based aggression, and prescribed sort of a puppy Prozac kind of thing, which didn't work at all. If anyone needed Prozac, apparently it was me, because, you know, it didn't affect the dog whatsoever. And then ultimately, we fixed him. He was a male dog, and the vet said, you know, you should fix him anyway because it's, you know, for politically correct reasons, you want to fix your dog so they don't overpopulate, but also because it supposedly lowers the testosterone level and makes them less aggressive, which, of course, had no effect on Freddie whatsoever. So we tried all these things, and none of them really worked. Also tried to wear him out by walking him for miles every day because beagles have enormous energy. And as it turned out, you could walk him forever. The only person that got worn out was me. So, you know, we tried all these things, and ultimately I ended up learning that to fix Freddie, I had to fix myself. And I had to learn to get tough. You know, I had this adolescent beagle, and apparently beagles have one of the longest adolescences of all dogs. And I had my son, Mikey, who became, during this time, an adolescent himself. So I had two badly behaved males in the house. And as a single mom, that's hard to deal with. You know, boys reach a point where they don't listen much, and teenagers don't listen much. So you have to get tough and become the pack leader, not just of the dog, but of the kid, too.
Right. And you have to do that rather than start taking the Prozac that was designed for Freddie.
Exactly. So that's what I did. I got private obedience classes for Freddie, and the trainer taught me how to train Freddie, and also taught me that, you know, she said, you know, I don't train dogs, I train people.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to learn, you know, to reward Freddie when he's good and ignore him when he's bad. And that's what I learned to do, and it worked, you know, which is not to say he's the world's best dog now,
right.
But he's considerably better.
Which is much like children.
Exactly, and that's one of the things. And right before we got you on the air, Melanie and I were talking about just that, the correlation between a puppy and an adolescent, and how, in the same things that you're saying, how you need to be able to get tough, you need to be able to work with them in such a way, kind of in the same way as you would, you would an adolescent. And I think what it sounds like is that you started out dealing with them from the standpoint of classes, just as you might if you went into like a group therapy with your teenager or a family therapy. And then it sounds like the correlation then became he needed something more personalized. You needed more of a one-on-one, and that seems to be what turned the tide.
Absolutely. Freddie didn't necessarily, you know, when you took him to obedience classes, and he was much more interested in everybody in the class than himself. He was interested in taking off. And I think teenage boys, they have a lot in common with beagles, you know. They're motivated by food, and they're motivated by driver's ed, you know. So I learned that, you know, I had to reward good behavior and say, okay, you can have driver's ed, you know, if you behave and your grades are good and you do your homework. And, you know, same thing with Freddie. You can have that treat if you behave and sit when you're told, and don't pee on my dates.
You're saying that they actually peed on the people you brought into the home?
Yes, Freddie didn't like men for a while. And then according to the animal behaviorist, this is very common happenstance with single moms. She asked me, she said, are you a single mom? And I was sort of taken aback by that question and you know, nearly insulted until she explained to me that she had been a single mom herself, and that in the absence of a pack leader, the dog will become the alpha male. And if there's no alpha male in the house, they'll become that alpha male, and they'll resent grown, you know, adult males, human males who come into the house. And I had that problem with him for a long time until I sort of took over and became the pack leader and could calm him down so that he's much, much happier and much nicer to the men who come by. But I think that's also true with a single mom. You know, you have the same issues with your children and whomever you may be dating. There's an acclimation process that has to work
right. For
everyone to get along.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point, because I think that's quite a mistake that a lot of single parents make, where they allow their children to then take over, or whoever that oldest child is. You don't want to put them in that position to where they have to now be an adult far before they should.
Exactly. You're supposed to be in charge. And I think that's, especially, certainly I, as a single mom, you know, I always want to make the kids happy. And making the kids happy, just like making Freddie happy, is not the point. You have to make them, prepare them so that they can be happy, not make them happy. And that's a totally different thing.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And again, it's a big mistake that we make as parents. Now, Melody, from the standpoint of a group therapy situation, in any of your groups, have you ever got to the point to where you said, I think it's time you bring in the dog?
That's an interesting question. Can you reframe that a little bit? I'm not sure quite what you mean.
No. I just mean that, you know, when you're working with a family, you know, you're obviously telling them some of the same types of things,
right?
You know, where you're saying, okay, look, you've got, you know, X amount of children involved, and it's really unfair if let's say that it's a daughter that is the oldest, and we've seen that in situations to where now the daughter ends up having to take over a motherly role over the rest of the children because mom or single parent is struggling because they have to work. You know, they're working two jobs or whatever. And I don't think the parents realize, I mean, at one point you think, well, this is great that I'm getting this help, but how is it affecting that child?
Well, it affects different children in different ways. In some ways, it teaches them responsibility and how to take care of, but then in another aspect, it's kind of unfair to ask a 16-year-old girl to start taking care of their 7-year-old brother and 3-year-old sister when there are things developmentally that they need to be spending time doing, such as going out, spending time with their friends and families and learning how to be an adult and handle other things.
Mm-hmm. And Paula, how did Mike go through this? And I assume now that because this has been a little while ago, he's now Mike instead of Mikey.
Well, he'll always be Mikey to me, whether he likes it or not. But yes, he's Mike now, and he's a freshman in college, so all's well that ends well. And of course, I'm left with Freddie, so that's my big reward. But I think the thing about being a single mom, especially with a son, is that you cannot be all things. You cannot be his father. You can only be his mother. And you have to find other male role models, you know, to fill that gap, because you know, you can't be a father. And I think what happens is we try to do too much, and if we do too much, and also if we depend on our kids for emotional support, we're supposed to be their emotional support, not the other way around. And I think sometimes when you're a single parent, you have this little tight bond, and you forget that, you know, you have to find your emotional support somewhere else. It can't be the kid, because that's too much to lay on them. Divorce is enough to lay on a kid.
Well, your child's very lucky to have had you. I wish more parents thought along the lines that you did, because a lot of parents look to their children to fill that void of not having a mate or a partner in their life.
Yes, well, I learned everything the hard way, but I made a lot of mistakes too. But I also think that, you know, I was lucky I had my parents who are in the book, and they, as grandparents, they were very, very helpful to me. And they, as my father, became sort of a father figure to both of my boys, and that was enormously helpful.
Well, and I would agree, because I think that that's one of the things that's happened in society is that as we have moved away from living in certain communities for a long period of time, so many of us are not getting the benefit of what grandparents have brought to the table. And I think that's hurting all of us as we move, you know, and spread out further and further. You know, I think it's a real loss to the kids to have those grandparents there that can tell them the stories and kind of pass on that wisdom that maybe the parents don't have the time to be there to pass on.
Well, yes, sure. I mean, my parents, you know, live far away, but they always made it a priority. We always made it a priority as a family, even though we're sort of far flung across the world, to get together, to stay in touch. And it's easier now than it used to be. You have Skype, you have all these, you know, and kids, of course, are so techno.
Exactly.
You know, centric, that they love staying in touch with people. And you know, my grandmother, my mother, who's a grandmother, great-grandmother now, she uses Skype and texting and everything else. So you can, I think it takes a lot of work, and you have to work harder, but you do have to keep those family ties intact. And it's not easy because we're such a mobile society. It's hard. But I'm a grandmother now, and my grandchildren live in Lausanne in Switzerland, but they're coming in 2 weeks, and I make sure I Skype them every week, and you just have to really keep those family ties alive, you know, not just family, but friends too. You know, we all have long, sort of lifelong friends who need to play a part in our lives and in the lives of our children.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Well, I was just curious on, you mentioned earlier that you had to learn to get tough. Can you explain a little bit how you got tough with Freddie or with yourself? Or?
Well, you know, I think the trouble is that we, especially as a woman and as a writer and as a communicator by, you know, nature, I talk, you know, but I would set down rules, but I wasn't very good at enforcing them because when push came to shove, I would cave every time. And I think, you know, kids are expert at guilting you. And as a single parent, you know, guilt is our life, you know. Sure. And they know how to do that. Those kids, they know how to work that against you and play that guilt big time. And you have to learn to fortify yourself against that and to make rules and enforce the rules. No matter how many tears, slam doors, rolling eyes, you have to ignore all that and stick by your rules. And I think that was hard for me to learn.
And isn't that something that dogs do, too? I find with my dog, he knows how to roll his eyes. He knows how to look at me. So I feel guilty and want to give in more. And if he does it enough, at least I know better not to give in to him. But he does try, just like children.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, just yesterday I was watching The Dog Whisperer with Cesar Millan, and he was saying how when he comes... He hopes that when he comes back in his next life, if he has to be born a dog, he's born a dog in America because American dogs are so spoiled. And I think you can make the case that sometimes our children are spoiled too, but not in a good way. You know, they're spoiled in the fact that we let them get away with, we don't set down boundaries, we don't keep to a routine, we don't set up their lives the way we should to make it easier for all of us. And if we learn to do that, it's easier for everybody, including the parent. But, you know, I think that especially my generation, baby boomer generation, I was raised by a colonel very strictly and with lots of love, certainly, but strictly. And I didn't want to raise my kids that way. I think there was sort of a backlash against that, and we're paying the price for it now.
Well, yeah, and I couldn't agree more because I think that, you know, you're right. I think we're from that same generation. And, you know, we had sort of the, you know, the freedom 60s and 70s in which we looked at it and thought, okay, we're going to do this differently. You know, we think that we're going to be smarter. We think that we're going to be able to do this. And you're right. When it comes right down to it, without the structure, we're trying too hard to be their best friend, and they don't need a best friend. And actually, they don't need a best friend that's, you know, 40 or 50 years old. Their best friend needs to be, you know, whatever they happen to be, 15 years old, if that's what it is. And we as parents need to understand that, you know, we're there to provide structure. We're there to be a parent. And it's not always an easy job. It's, you know, the easy thing is to just try to be their friend, but that's not really what they need when it comes down to it.
Well, I think it takes more effort.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it does take more effort and more work to actually parent a child and set those boundaries, set those expectations, be consistent with what you want, and have that structure for them, where parents are so busy, especially single parents, doing multiple jobs, trying to do everything else, that they just do what's easy. It's like, okay, go ahead and have your third ice cream before dinner. You know?
Yeah.
Just whatever it's going to be.
Exactly. Exactly. And I do think, too, you know, we always had dinner together, you know. And Freddie, of course, Freddie loves mealtime. He loves mealtime, too, and was waiting for those table scraps. But I think that's important, too, is to make time to have dinner together so that you can at least talk. It's the one time of day that you actually talk to each other.
Right. And I think, you know, when I was just talking about best friends, it reminded me that when we got dogs and we did the same thing that you did, in fact, it's very similar. We've gotten our dogs through shelters and through places to where, you know, if we don't get them, they're liable to be destroyed. And we got our first one and he's wonderful and he's nice and he doesn't bark too much and he's pretty obedient and all of that was great. And then when it came time for my younger son and he wanted a beagle, by the way. And so we went looking and we brought the other dog with us when we would go visit the dog, because we wanted to let them play together and make sure that they would get along and that they could be the best friend, because we're not going to be there, you know, all the time for the dog. And that was one of the things we were told from the shelter, is they weren't going to give us a dog if we didn't have an intent to spend plenty of time with the dog and or have another dog with them so that they have a constant companion.
Absolutely. Shakespeare's been Freddie's best companion. And, of course, before Mikey went off to college, he was home a lot of the time because he got off of school early. So Freddie's never been alone. You know, he's always had companionship, both Mikey's. And, of course, when Mikey went off to college, both Freddie and I were both sad. So we're both empty nesters now, me and Freddie. So we're working on that. But Shakespeare's still around, so it's still a pack. We still have a pack at home. But it's hard to have, you know, to expect the dog to be home all by itself all the time.
Well, who's handling it better, you or Freddie?
Well, I was really depressed at first. You know, it was hard for me because I had never come home to an empty house. I'd had kids my entire adult life. So I had to totally focus on myself, and I didn't really know what to do with that. But now I've decided that actually I could have a lot of fun and I could focus on me. And Freddie gets a lot of longer walks now. He gets a lot of attention. So that helps, although he's very happy when Mikey comes home on the weekends. He's very thrilled to see him. And not just Mikey, but all his pals who used to hang out at the house together. He used to be a whole house full of boys, you know, playing video games and hanging out and watching ball games.
Oh,
so that's pretty quiet, except for Freddie howling. It's pretty quiet.
Well, let me go to a listener question, and we have one that has come in that says, single moms frequently are the parent and the most responsible and have the most responsibility for the children. In my case, there were frequent heated conversations. Fortunately, we too had a very entertaining pup. I truly believe that Star, which is the name of the pup, Star's unconditional love and devil-may-care mischievous personality played a tremendous part in helping us all keep laughter and love in our lives. I applaud you for your book and its wonderful message.
So. Oh, well, thank you very much. I certainly think that that's true. You know, when we first got Freddie, we were in a new place. You know, Mikey had to move again, make new friends, go to a new school. And a lot of times that accompanies divorce in the aftermath of divorce. So now Mikey had a friend all his own. Freddie was his friend all his own. And that really helped Mikey. Freddie was his pal, you know. And I think that's a great thing about having a pet for a child, is that you have that one friend who's always there for you. And it helps you heal as a family to have that companionship.
Yeah, and one of the things I noticed in the book, and I thought of this while I was reading it, is that we as parents sometimes answer, as you did, where apparently when Mikey was much smaller, he had asked for a puppy, and you had said, you know, maybe someday when we have our own home. And for us to understand as parents that to them is a promise. To us, if we're speaking to another adult and we say maybe someday, we're not really thinking of it as a promise. But I like the fact that you recognize that to him it was a promise. Really didn't matter at that point that you didn't mean it to be that at that time. And that, you know, as difficult as it may have been, you followed through with it and said, okay, he perceives it as a promise. I'm going to take it that way. And immediately went to the shelter and started looking for the right pup.
Well, I think, you know, kids of divorce, from their perspective, there are already promises broken. And I think there are a lot of promises broken with kids of divorce. And so the few that you can keep, the ones you can keep, you have to keep. People have asked me, why didn't you get rid of this dog? And I said, how could I have done that? That would have been giving up on Mikey, giving up on me, giving up on our family. So I couldn't do that. It was a promise I had to keep. And I think that given the broken promises that kids of divorce have to live with, you have to try to keep as many of them as you can.
Absolutely. And had you gotten rid of the dog, I think at that point Mikey may have thought he could be expendable as well. So I applaud that. You know what? We're going to take a break. We will be back in just a couple of minutes. So everybody stay tuned. And we are talking about fixing Freddie.
Trust the source. just like so being born again. So be confident.
Don't back down.
Don't back down for nothing.
Face the storm and trust the soil.
I lost my boys and lost some boys lose their freedom. Sad thing about it is this world needs to make that bad happens, but read some good books. Cause just like me, they want their locks looking good. Miseducation of the hip hop nations on them radio stations, but your hopes got passions. Don't worry, you was born to win. Shoot for the moon and you see the sun. I am only a fool when you hear what I am. The tools only confuse the one I am. Girl, come on, while I'm been through the trenches. Don't ask about my wardrobe, I'm taking care of business. I am the truth, baby, you can be the witness. Is he conscious, charges, honest? Yo, what is this? You was born to lose. Then at night when you dream, the stars wouldn't be you.
You were born
when you're born to win. It's just like being born again. So be confident. When you're born to win, you might lose the cause, but trust the stars. When you're born to win, it's just like being born again. So be confident. When you're born to win, you might face the storm, but trust the stars.
If you'd rather be working on the corner, then I'm talking to you.
That's right. Now remember, we are all born to win. We are talking with Paula Monier, and we are talking about fixing Freddie. So Paula, let me ask, we've got another question that came in, and actually the first one I thought was a question. It was actually a wonderful comment. This question is emailed in, and it says, did your son ever take his frustrations out on Freddie? It says, we have a daughter who has just turned 4 years old, and I have recently noticed that if we discipline her, she immediately turns to our dog, Jonesy, and begins harassing him about whatever the silly things he's done. Is this some kind of alpha top dog thing, or what?
Now, this is a little girl who's 4?
Yeah, it's a little girl who's 4.
I think 4 is a different age, and I'm sure that you can address that, because by the time we got this dog, Mikey was 12, and he wasn't going to act out that way. By the time they're 12, they don't act out on anybody but you. So that's the teenager thing, whereas I think little ones are different.
No, I agree. And Melody, what's some of your thoughts in regards to where children that are being disciplined then at whatever age it may be, choose to take it out on their animals or on their siblings?
Well, and that I see that a lot. A lot of parents will bring their children in for therapy because they're beating up on each other, the older ones hitting the younger one. But when you're talking about a four-year-old, you're talking about someone who doesn't have the capability to explain, what's going on, their hurts, their feelings, and what's happening. If they're being disciplined, all I know is to turn around, and they're hurting, so let's hurt something else. And they've learned that behavior from their parents or on TV or their siblings at preschool, and they turn around and just take it out on the other child.
Right.
And sometimes the dog. And you have to, that's why you have to supervise your children, especially when they're younger, and teach them between right and wrong. No, we don't pull the dog's ear. We don't pull the dog's tail. We don't bite them. Just like you wouldn't bite your 18-month-old sister.
Exactly. So, Paula, so what you're saying is that fortunately, in this case, Freddie never got to the point of irritating Mikey to the point that Mikey would take it out on him.
No, I mean, if Mikey were irritated, it was usually they're usually taking it out on me. That's what teenagers do. Your parents, everybody's wrong. Your parents are wrong, right? It's all your mother's fault. So, and they're more sophisticated as teenagers, Certainly they, certainly in our house, it was the battle of the wicked tongues. So maybe that's what happens when you're writers. But that's where, teenagers, they punish you by shutting you out or talking back or, whatever it may be. But it's usually, the dog was safe.
Well, I was just going to say, it sounds like Freddie was a companion to your son and his best friend and the one he turned to when he couldn't turn to mom because mom's an adult. He has his own.
Right, exactly.
So he could turn to
and
Freddie.
I think that's true for a lot of kids.
Oh, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Older kids.
And younger kids, too. I know growing up, I had dogs, and they were my best friend, and I'd spend hours just talking to them because they look at you, and they seem to understand everything you're saying, and they respond to your body language and your I hate to say energy, but, you know, the energy. If you're feeling sad, they come up and they give you a kiss. If you're feeling upset, they leave you alone. You know, they seem to understand.
Yes. Well, and they are literally bred to respond to every human emotion. That their survival depends on it. So you can count on them for that, which is, you know, one part of the appeal of having a pet is that they're so attuned to you and your moods.
Right. Now, what are some of the other things that Freddie taught you?
You know, Freddie ended up teaching me a lot of things. He did teach me that there are some people you shouldn't let into your life or your house. And he taught me to slow down and enjoy a long walk in the cranberry bogs and to take a nap in the sun. And when all else fails, howl at the moon.
Right. So, did you ever figure out if maybe the dates that he peed on were ones that probably shouldn't be in your life anyway?
Well, yes. As it turned out, Freddie had a pretty good judge of character. And certainly he always knows, because beagles have such a great, great sense of smell, one of the best in the dog world. He always knows if the person, whoever comes to the house, he knows, whoever he meets, he knows if they're an animal person or not. He can smell the cats and the dogs and the feathered friends on those people. So he loves those people. Mm-hmm. If he figures, you know, if you're a dog person, you're welcome to come on in. But if you're not, then he's not so sure.
And no. I'm sure.
So I guess, you know, if a man isn't nice to his dog, then you shouldn't date him. It's probably a good rule.
Well, that's what I was just thinking, is like you wouldn't want a man who Freddie didn't accept or that would not accept Freddie, because that shows, I think, the character of how understanding and how tolerant and how patient he is.
Absolutely. And if he doesn't like your dog, odds are he's not going to like your kids very much either.
Yeah. In fact, when you're bringing up the thing about the beagle and their ability to, just through their sense of smell, is that, and we have lots of people that come over, and instantly that's the first thing our beagle does, who is Cairo, and he goes up and he smells them. Well, we had one person who worked for a gardener that came out, and for whatever reason, I mean, this, you know, our Freddie, Cairo just did not like this particular person. No matter what happened, this particular person could not get him to like him in any shape, way, or form. And at one point in time later on, we saw that that he was actually not a very good person. You know, that there were things about him that we learned later about that one particular person, that he just wasn't a good person, and it turned out it was good that we ended up not continuing to work with that person, because it was more than just the fact that Cairo sensed it. We found out later Cairo was right. So, yes, you're right. They're very perceptive.
Yes, and again, you know, they're literally programmed to, you know, their survival depends on interaction with humans, positive interaction with humans. So if they don't like a human, there's probably a really good reason.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to remember that. I mean, I have a great deal more respect for dogs. You know, I always loved dogs, but having had Freddie and then having written the book and learned so much, done so much research, I have enormous respect now for dogs and for what they have to teach us.
Mm-hmm. Now, we had another question that was emailed in where it says, it said, I really enjoyed your book, and I was wondering how the two dogs got along. And it says, because they personally, bringing a young puppy into their home, they had a great deal of difficulty with the fact of the established dog that had been with the family for some time. Did you run into that?
Well, Shakespeare, who was our adopted dog from the pound, has just been the sweetest dog ever. I mean, he's just the best dog anyone could ever hope to have. And when we brought, you know, he was maybe 6 years old, I guess, when we brought, or six or seven, hard to know because we adopted him, but when we brought Freddie home, and of course Freddie was this lively ball of energy, and Shakespeare had always had the house to himself, and he got along fine with Freddie, you know, unless Freddie went after his food, and then Shakespeare would show him who was top dog in the house. Freddie didn't get along so well with our cat, who, you know, had to swat him a couple times before he understood that he was to leave her alone. And later, when Freddie morphed into this adolescent beagle from hell, he started teaching Shakespeare bad habits. Ooh. Which is, you know, that's the risk you take when you have a two-dog household. Freddie, who had been the world's perfect dog, was now barking and you know, growling and doing things he had never done before because he was following Freddie's lead. So we had to nip that in the bud.
Well, that's just like children who go to preschool and first grade, and they come home with these habits and behaviors that you have never seen before. It's amazing what happens when they start learning other things from other children.
Now, what
exactly? Not necessarily good things.
Right. Now, what breed is Shakespeare?
Shakespeare is probably sheepdog or Briard Collie. He's a big, shaggy mutt, but obviously a herding dog. He has the herding, the herding things, traits that make him very protective and very lovable. And, you know, unlike Freddie, not a howler, not, you know, easier to get along with, and certainly more civilized than Freddie used to be. But Freddie, like I said, he's a much better dog now.
Right. Well, and actually,
although not perfect.
Well, and I think that's the same thing we need to look at in regards to our children. Okay, you're never going to achieve perfection. You know, if that's your goal, you're going to be frustrated, and your kids are probably going to leave because they're not going to deal with it either. So that's true, is that you accept them the way they are, you take it on, you take on the good with the bad, and you get them to be the best they can be, which may not necessarily be perfect in your eyes, but as long as it's the best they can be in their own.
Well, sure, and I think the most important thing as a parent, really, or as a dog owner, or in life in general, is just to try to keep your perspective and try to maintain a sense of humor. I think that will save you every time. Sense of humor, there's a lot of, you know, there are a lot of tears in a family that's broken up and with divorce and custody battles and all that. There's a lot of tears that go along with it. So if you can just try to inject some humor into even some of the worst situations, it really does help. If you can just laugh at the things that go wrong, because something's going to go wrong. It's just a question of time. It's how you deal with it. And I think it's an important lesson for you, and it's an important lesson for your kids to learn that, you know, when all else fails, laugh. Because there's not, you know, you can only cry for so long.
Is that something that you had learned in your process of fixing Freddie, is learning to have a better sense of humor, or have you always had a good sense of humor?
Well, I was raised by a family with a good sense of humor. I was an only child, and my father, who was the colonel, decided that I would be miserably spoiled if he didn't tease me unmercifully. So I learned to laugh at myself early on, and I think that's a good trait. I mean, I do think it will save you. Certainly there are times that, you know, especially going through a divorce, that, you know, you're just devastated and heartbroken, and your kids are devastated and heartbroken. So I think that you have to learn, whether it's going to the movies or a favorite sitcom, or, you know, just hanging out for, in our case, it was, you know, playing Trivial Pursuit or whatever it may be, that gives you an out, you know, a little escape, a little respite from whatever drama's going on. That really does help, and you can learn to laugh. You know, no matter what, you can learn to laugh, because you really have no choice. Otherwise, you know, life can be one long misery if you look at it that way. So you have to, I think I have tried to teach my children that, you know, lighten up, because life is short and you may as well have a good time while you're here.
Absolutely. It's one of my favorite plaques in my office says, this life is not a dress rehearsal. This is it. So enjoy it and enjoy the journey.
Absolutely. Now, what does Mike think of the book?
Well, Mike, it's funny because when I finished the first draft, I gave it to everyone in my family to read, and my older children and my parents who are in the book, and they all loved it. And I said, Mikey, you know, you have to read it. I mean, all he ever read was Kurt Vonnegut. So I told him, I said, you know, you're in it, you should read it. And I don't think he read a lot of it until when it finally came out and it occurred to him that, you know, people were going to read it. But he came to my book lunch party. He was very proud. His best friends, who hung out at the house all the time, while he was growing up and are also in the book, they asked for autographed copies for their parents, which I thought was very sweet. Mm-hmm. And I think he heard most of the book when he went to visit his father, and his father got a copy of the book and read parts to him out loud, which we thought was very funny. But my ex-husband actually has been very supportive of the book, and I couldn't be happier about that.
Well, yeah, and I'm glad, because I think, I've spoken with some other authors who have written a life story, and for their child, I mean, this is a lot of his life that's now out there for everybody to read. And so it's good that if he's really comfortable with it and embracing it.
Yes, I mean, I think part of that is, you know, he's off. He's just gone off to college, and you know, teenagers, it's all about them, as it should be. You know, his life now is about finding his way in the world. And so, what mom does, you know, he really doesn't care that much. It's not that of that much importance to him. I think it was great that I wrote the book. I think it was great that my ex and I came to a truce, and that when Mikey graduated from high school, we had this wonderful party this past summer, and my ex came, and his sister came, and everyone came, and it was a lovely, lovely time. We were all able to be together in a very nice way, and I think that was great. And we had this great party, and even Freddie was good. Freddie had not been allowed to come to a party in a long time because of his antisocial behavior, but he was very good. He charmed everyone, and everyone, of course, knew about the book, so they were happy to meet Freddie. And he was almost perfect, and then he ate the cake. So other than that, the party went off without a hitch until Freddie ate the cake.
Well, it seems like he deserved it.
Yeah, he was the star of the show, so he figured, why shouldn't he?
Exactly. Okay. So other than that, it went off without a hitch. And, you know, I do think that that's important. That if you know, that's the hardest part about divorce is dealing with, you know, the ex-spouse is dealing with one another and trying to decide for the sake of the children to get along as best as possible.
Well,
and it's not easy. That's the hardest part.
No, yeah. Of course it's not easy, but it sounds like you did put your children first, and the relationship with their father was more important than any other feelings you might have regarding your ex-husband.
Yeah, I did. I mean, it took a while to get there, I'll have to admit, and I think it takes everybody a while to get there. But you do. You both, as my ex and I both have talked about it and said, you know, and the part of getting older is understanding that, you know, good times, you have to celebrate the good times. And when your children are the best times, and they're not here for very long. Before you know it, they're grown. So you have to make the most of every opportunity.
That is true. Now, as we look at this book, and this obviously is how Freddie has sort of helped you through the divorce process, helped you through the, you know, helped you and Mike through Mike's adolescence. Is there a sequel in the works that maybe how Freddie helps you with the empty nest syndrome or something?
Well, certainly people have suggested that, and we'll have to see how well I do with the emptiness. But he is my new best friend now that we're all together, just me and Freddie and Shakespeare, and we take long walks through the bogs and we plan our empty nester life. But yes, I would love to write a sequel. It would be a lot of fun, and certainly Freddie has lots of plans up his sleeves. I do worry Shakespeare's getting older now. He's 13, 14, we're not sure, and he's not going to live forever. And then the question is, Freddie's a pack hound. Do I add to the pack? That'll be a big question of bringing another puppy home. Oh, my goodness. I don't know about that. I don't know about another beagle, but we may end up with him before it's all over.
Well, that was going to be one of my questions, having the dogs. I mean, unfortunately, our dogs don't live the same lifespan as humans, but when you bring in a new puppy, if you have plans to bring that, remember older dogs usually teach the younger dogs how to live in the world and in their home. So,
that's a scary thought, isn't it?
Well, I'm just thinking, what are some of the good things Freddie might share and teach the younger dog, if and when you choose to do that?
Well, certainly he's a very lovable dog. If you know you have a beagle, you know beagles. It's harder to find a cuter dog than a beagle. They're just cute. They're funny. They're cheerful, you know, and they're friendly. And they make great family companions because of all those adorable qualities. And so in that respect, I would be happy to have another beagle, but I would be better prepared for you have to be prepared for their energy and their mischievousness, you know,
and that was
their sense of mischief, which is alive and well.
And that's another question I wanted to ask you, too, because you have this big, older, big, hairy dog, which you just love, Shakespeare, and then you have Freddie, who's a bayer and has been a lot of fun and a few challenges through the years. according to your book. And I was just curious, when families, especially maybe single parents, when they're thinking about getting their child a dog, the extra responsibility it takes, what are your expectations did you have for your child to be taking care of the dog as opposed to you as the adult, and knowing what breed you're going to get for the dog instead of just picking out anything?
Yes, I mean, I did not do what I should have done. I did not prepare myself well. This was when we got Freddie. It was before the recession. It was before Katrina. And there were not that many dogs in Massachusetts where I live, puppies. There were not that many puppies available because Massachusetts citizens are very good about getting their animals spayed and neutered. So there weren't that many puppies available. So we ended up, you know, having adopted Shakespeare from the pound and have adopted our cats from the pound. We ended up going to a puppy palace, I call it in the book, and finding a puppy there. And, you know, they were mostly Paris Hilton puppies who would fit in your purse. They were little frou-frou dogs that I just couldn't imagine Mikey with. You know, we needed a guy dog. And the closest thing there was Freddie, the only beagle, who was 6 months old and half price. And, of course, I just bought a house and was broke. And so half price looked really good to me. And so I didn't even know a thing about beagles. And that was absolutely the wrong way to go about getting a dog for your kid. You shouldn't do that. We saw Freddie. We fell in love with him. I promised Mikey a dog. We took him home, and all hell broke loose. I should have been better prepared. I should have researched beagles. I should have known what I was up against, and I didn't. And I would highly encourage anyone who's going to get a pet for their child to research more, to know what they're going in for, and to get the dog from, you know, people they know, whether it's the pound or a shelter or, you know, through a friend, somewhere that you know where the dog is coming from. You have a good idea of what kind of dog it is and how they behave. And I think it's very clever of you to take your dog with you, your older dog, when you went to get a new puppy, because that dog, you know, he knows more than you do about his own species. And that was a very smart thing to do. I think that's a great idea, too. But no, I did not do it the right way. Don't do it my way. Do it better.
Well, it seems like when you do it your way, you have a chance to learn a lot of things about yourself and about animals.
Well, certainly you could say that about life. All your mistakes are great lessons, right?
Absolutely.
Absolutely, yes. And yes, thank you. In regards to taking the other one, I'd like to say that we thought it all through, but when it came down to it, I was concerned that they would fight, because we were getting two male dogs. We didn't want to end up with a male and female and then deal with litters and everything else. So,
spay and neuter.
Yeah. But, I mean, I'm just saying that at that point in time, with the age of the kids, I thought if I get one of each, the kids are going to go, okay, well, now let's have puppies. And I'm like, no, don't want to have it. So, but anyway, the main concern was we didn't want them to fight, and we were just glad that they loved to play together.
Oh, well, you lucked out. That's great.
That's right.
And certainly Freddie and Shakespeare are good friends now. And, you know, they're very good friends now, and they hang out together, and the three of us, you know, sort of hang out alone now. So until we figure out what to do next, where life will take us next.
Well, Paula, I appreciate you sharing this with us. I appreciate you writing the book. I think that maybe you should be thinking about a sequel. It could be interesting.
Well, thanks.
And especially if it's a training one, maybe this one, and it can go from fixing Freddie to how Freddie fixes the next pup.
So. There you go. Freddie and Friends, I guess.
There you go.
That's a great title.
All right. Well, again, thank you so much. Again, now, I just want to say, where can people get the book? Because, again, I'm fortunate enough that I've been able to read it, but where can anybody out there
Barnes & Noble, your local bookstore, Borders, Amazon.com, anywhere good books are sold, there's Freddie.
Wonderful. Again, thank you so much.
And you can always go to FixingFreddie.com.
Perfect.
You can go to FixingFreddie.com and see lots of videos of Freddie behaving badly.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
All we had to do was turn on the camera, leave the house, and the burger's on the table, and there he goes. Turn on the camera and wait.
Okay, now I know where I'll be checking later this afternoon. Again, thank you so much. Take care, Paula.
You bet. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Melody, yes. Unfortunately, we are out of time, but thank you so much for joining us again.
Oh, sure. My pleasure.
All right. And if you want to get more information or if you have ideas for our show, you can go to answers4thefamilyblog.com. Give us your comments, give us your questions, and we will always try to do what we can to get them on. Until next week, seek to catch someone doing something good every day. We are out of here.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.